You fit the description.
That's
really good. I saw Tom trying to quickly capture you on mic with that one. I saw the countdown going, which is why. I kept my mouth shut.
Look, I'm just here for the clicks.
You're listening to the Host Unknown podcast.
Hello, hello, hello. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening from wherever you're joining us, and welcome to episode 125-ish.
130.
Of the Host Unknown podcast. And as you can hear, Andy joins us with his head in a bucket. Andy, why so odd?
I'm in the hotel room that you were in a few weeks back when you recorded. I just wanted to see if I could improve on the sound quality, but alas, no, I couldn't. So it's a wasted trip.
It's a moral imperative that you went and did that, and I'm very impressed. But it seemed, alas, it was a wasted trip, to say the least.
Yeah, I am. So obviously we are recording earlier than usual, and I am out and about. So I do not have a mobile studio like you do, because I don't need to spend $3,000 and still end up with the same quality that I have talking through AirPods.
I was just on AirPods at the time. Come on. That's what's prompted me to invest in a mobile studio.
Yeah, so I don't intend to be away that often. As long as we stick to the same recording days, per usual.
It would be handy, but, some of us do things on Fridays, right?
Yeah, indeed. And do you know what? Talking doing things on Fridays, can I just compliment you for skillfully sidestepping any detailed conversation about the Lloyd of London data incident?
So, Jeff, how's your week been?
Well, I was speaking to my insurance broker and talking to him about Lloyd's of London.
Andy, tell us more about your week.
So just going through cyber insurance renewal at the moment and looking at possible scenarios where, they're definitely looking at what events could occur and how you deal with them. So I said, I've got a friend who's a CISO, and he's certainly been involved in some sort of incident adjacent exercises recently. So I shall tap him up for some insider knowledge.
You're not making this easy. This could become a very short episode and a very short tenure for me as well.
But when we discover that, that the client actually has a legal department that listens to podcasts.
Yeah. Yes. And not just listens to podcasts, but listens to, vaguely unsuccessful ones.
And ours as well.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. I mean, on the list of unlikely ones to listen to, it's quite down the bottom there.
How's your week anyway, John?
Good. So first half, I was in Sidmouth in Devon. I went there almost immediately after we recorded last week. I'm surprised you didn't hear the door slam behind me on the podcast recording, actually.
We normally hear the door being opened or delivered.
Well, this is true. Yeah, this is true. So I had a little bit of a mini break in an Airbnb down in Sidmouth in Devon, did some photo editing, took a bunch of photos, completely finished the first chapter of my book. I wrote another 1,500, 2,000 words, which doesn't sound like much, but, it was like pulling teeth. It's been nice. And I had to go into the office yesterday for a few meetings and a photo shoot, of all things. I should be tacking an extra day on the holiday next week. All feeling quite good. I've only been up about 40 minutes.
Well, I like the way you call it a photo shoot, whereas most people call them mugshots.
Yeah, that's right.
And you call it an office,
I had to hold my name up. Yeah. Why do I have to hold this thing up?
Why are you doing hand painting?
Yeah.
Why are we doing hand painting?
That's right. And you know, I can do it myself. I don't need you to hold my hand while you do it.
You say you were down in Sidmouth and you took some photos, but you shared some of them with us. And Andy and I were quite concerned about the amount of non-consensual zoomed in photos you were taking of strangers.
Well, as he would say, if you're in public, you have no expectation to you have no expectation of privacy.
Absolutely. So the two people I took a photo of up close, I actually spoke to them afterwards and told them where to find the image afterwards. And then the others are certainly non-recognisable and miles away, to say the least.
Which is probably what makes it even more creepy, if in my humble opinion.
Yeah.
Hey?
Yeah.
Maybe I'll put the link in the show notes and let the viewers decide.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Especially the one of the little boys on the beach.
Yeah.
Oh, please. God, you know what? You never let the truth get in the way of a good story, eh, guys?
Never.
Never.
And talking of never letting the truth get in the way of some good stories, let's see what we've got coming up for you today. This Week in InfoSec asks, how old do you think the first computer games really were? Rant of the Week is a password crackdown for financial reasons. Billy Big Balls is a plot for True Lies 2. Industry News brings the latest great security news stories from around the world. And Tweet of the Week is a novel way to identify the serious cold callers. And so we do move straight on to our favourite part of the show, the part of the show that we like to call
This Week in InfoSec.
It is that part of the show where I report live from the closet and take you on a trip down InfoSec memory lane with content liberated from the Today in InfoSec Twitter account and further afield.
I thought you came out of the closet weeks ago, Andy.
Jump back in. Okay. I was travelling through some high-risk countries.
Right.
Yeah, so let's jump back
in. Man's got to do what they've got to do to get out of trouble, right?
Exactly. So our first story. So October's a great month historically for the gaming community, right? And so our first story takes us back a mere 37 years to my year of birth, when on 18th of October 1985, Nintendo released the Nintendo Entertainment System, aka the NES, across New York. It was an immediate hit, obviously, with you know, games including Donkey Kong Jr., Super Mario Brothers, and Duck Hunt. So obviously, as we as we talk about that, I'm talking about, you know, something that was from my year of birth. I shall then take you back 45 years to the same month, on the 14th of October 1977, to Jab's year of birth, when Atari released their video computer system, known as the VCS, and later as the more commonly known Atari 2600. And believe it or not, it actually took 2 years to actually gain any sort of traction. It's not like the NES, when that came out, it was like, you know, number one everywhere. The Atari 2600 actually took 2 years before it became the best-selling gift of the Christmas season. And obviously, once it had been established, it was, you know, the best-selling console of all time at that point of view. And so the third game which came out, or the third sort of console which came out in October, was the 18th of October 1958, a mere 64 years, which was your year of birth, Tom, when William Higginbottom and Robert Dvorak Sr., I think, they showed off a... Dvorak, yeah, they showed off a tennis simulator. I mean, you were there, right? You'd know.
Hey,
so they showed off this tennis simulator.
I was a ball boy for that game.
Yeah, a game they called Tennis for Two. And it was developed on a very old machine called a Donna Model 30 analog computer using an oscilloscope. And it's the first known electronic game to use a graphical display. So these guys developed this game to show off, you know, the place where they work. It was only shown off twice during like the annual visitors day, but hundreds of visitors lined up to play it. And what was little was known about this game for decades, but it was actually very similar to what was then later became Pong. You know, where you've got two things hitting each other from across the room. This was like the, you know, the tennis for two. But ultimately, it's like an early version of Pong, created in 1958, and there is actually no direct relationship between these games. So what is the InfoSec link, you ask? Other than InfoSec people also need downtime, and we all grew up with gaming consoles. And this just represents our three generations perfectly, I think.
I think so. Well, do you know what I find really interesting is the Atari system. This is
the
classic
one. Why it took
so long
to become popular?
Yeah, but it's the classic one with like the wood inlay around it and the the classic Tank was one of the original games.
Early games,
like
that.
But yeah, in fact, Lego do a version of this as well, which I'm really quite keen to get hold of because it'd be rather cool. But the fact that it takes, as you said, 2 years to gain traction. If you don't gain traction in 2 months now, you're dead. You're dead in the water.
Well, not
right?
even that. You have to sell out before it's released, right? You do it all on pre-order.
Well, yes.
If you don't do that, then the game's already a failure.
Yeah.
It has to be unavailable the day it comes out, or else it's not successful at all.
I mean, look at the PS5, right? You could not get that for love nor money for about a year.
Yeah. Crazy.
Incredible.
But, our second story takes us back a mere 65 years to the 14th of October, 1957. And, Tom, you'll remember when this was founded. I believe your membership card is 002. This is when the British Computer Society was founded. So BCS is one of several international societies that have an affiliate membership relationship with the IEEE Computer Society. And obviously since 1984, BCS has operated under a royal charter, which requires it to promote the study and practice of computing and to advance knowledge therein for the benefit of the public. And as we know, BCS has done a lot for our industry, and you know they maintain a number of certifications, accreditations, and they were ultimately, I think back in the day, you know, we used to use them. If you ever had a conflict where, you know, a competitor wanted to audit you or something, you weren't happy for the competitor to audit you, you'd reach out to the BCS and, you know.
Oh, really? I did not know they did that.
No. Yeah, we would agree that they're a mutual party, you know, with no...
Escrow.
Yeah, almost. And so they we know that they would carry out an effective audit that gives, you know, the competitor the assurance and also doesn't reveal any trade secrets.
Ah, interesting.
So I'm a member of the BCS and I'm a chartered fellow IT professional, something like that.
What does that mean?
Nice.
Not sure. What it means is they take about 300 quid a year.
Yeah.
One of the shakedown.
He's a golly fellow.
I remember when I was at university, one of our computing teacher modules, whatever, the teacher, he was like, We have a student program for the BCS. You can get out membership and what have you. So a whole bunch of us, we got membership with the BCS for free for a year. And the next year we were out of university. Didn't know, no one renewed because no one really understood what it did or what value it was. So we weren't going to be paying them any money. No, sorry.
It does have a little bit of a broad charter. And I think it, like many of these things, a bit like ISC squared and ISACA and all that sort of thing, unless you actually leverage what they're doing, you're right, you know, what is it gonna bring you, apart from some letters after your name, right?
Have you seen the latest drama with ISC squared?
I know I'm thinking of actually not renewing.
What's going on?
Mainly because also I can't be asked to do the CPEs, but I just can't, you know, I just got a question about where the hell they're going.
Well, what do they do? Well, there's a whole bunch of changes. There's a legal type letter, which all their letters are so poorly written when you get an email from them, because they're all written legalese that no one can understand. But they're making some changes to their bylaws. And some of them are like, you know, before, if you wanted to be on the board, you had to get like, if you weren't selected by the board, you could get 500 members to vote for you. Now they're upping that to 1% of the membership. So that's like pretty much 2,000 people you need to get to vote for you. And then before, like, the whole board used to go up for election, and now it's like, I think, and now it's like only the available seats. So I think Wim maybe described it as a coronation as opposed to a democratic process. And then they want to make the CEO of IC Squared also the president of the non-profit part of it, the safe and secure sort of thing. It's all looks very, very dodgy and underhand.
And there's an ethics thing as well. So there's an independent ethics body, and they want to bring that into the same committee.
Not so independent anymore.
So it's not independent.
And funny thing is, yesterday, my colleagues were on a call, like they're doing a thing about the whole thing. And one of the things is they're rebranding. So no longer will they be ISC squared. They will be simply known as ISC2. They're removing the brackets.
Interesting.
I could have told them to do that when I set up TL2. Because, it was originally TL squared, and then I just got fed up of explaining it, so it was TL2. It was just so much easier.
Although their whole full name is International Information Systems Security.
Yeah, IISSCC.
Certification, whatever. Like, it's like IISSCC. So it makes sense to call it ISC squared, and if you do ISC2, it doesn't make mathematical sense anymore, which is
I must admit, they're going in the wrong direction on this. They're following what I can only call Trumpian values.
Interesting. I'll keep it
because
on.
it's all about regaining or taking control away from the people you're serving in order to ensure that you retain power and control over everything.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I seriously,
wow, that was a depressing end.
Yep.
Yeah. Same. Absolutely. So, ISC squared, if you'd like to sponsor an episode and give us your side of the story, you're very welcome to. It will cost a lot, but I'm sure
free membership.
Free membership for life. Yeah, and no need for CPEs. Then we'll talk. Then we'll talk. Yeah. Right. Excellent. Thank you very much, Andy, for this week's...
This week in InfoSec.
This is the podcast The Queen...
No, it isn't. Oh, dear.
You're listening to the award-winning Host Unknown podcast. Officially more entertaining than Smashing Security. In your face!
I think I might have got away with that one.
Yeah.
Right, on to the next part of the show. It is time for...
Listen up!
Rant of the week.
It's time to mother rage!
So, as a friend of the show and fellow competitor to our podcast, Graham Cluley, he likes to point out an awful lot about the fact that he has a blue check on his Twitter account. And whilst we all might, publicly laugh, I think we're all silently kind of a little bit jealous, right?
He's got a blue check, you've got blue pills. What's the...
I tell you what, I bet mine were harder to get hold of. But I think, a blue check on Twitter, it kind of denotes a certain element of recognition. There's no doubt about that. You can join the ranks of Stephen Fry and the Kardashians, just to put everything in context and at both ends of the spectrum here. So anything to do with either getting hold of a blue tick or, maintaining your blue tick, I think is really quite a big deal for many people. And Twitter, and Jack, I'm sure you'd like to sponsor the episode, and all it will cost you is three blue ticks. Four, actually, because we've got to include the Host Unknown one, obviously. But nonetheless... maintaining and retaining this is really quite important. There is this trend. There is now a black market for blue checks, which just tells you that, frankly, people will do anything for the clout, right? They'll do anything to try and show that they're more important than others. So August 15th this year, a Twitter user, Diana Pearl, logged into her email and saw that someone in Moscow had logged into a verified Twitter account. So She was. It looked like a, you know, a perfectly normal Twitter email. It resembled previous automated correspondence, blah blah blah. So, fearing her account safety, she clicked inside the email that would instantly let us secure her account. Entered her existing password to update it. Moments later, a message arrived in a Telegram app, and all it contained was a screenshot of Pearl's Twitter profile and a link. 3 hours later, the admin texted, "Sold." She'd been phished, and not only that, she'd been phished by a hacker who copied the look of the Twitter message and basically had encouraged her to put her details in, and she had actually handed over ownership of her verified Twitter account. That's pretty serious stuff, right? Especially given, you know, Twitter considers itself to be, you know, a bastion of free and controlled speech, as it were. Not controlled, I mean, as in it is. They do filter it to one degree or another, and that's certainly not what we're going to be talking about today. And it's been shown that it can influence elections. It can influence government behaviour. You know, no less, you know, Trump not being kicked off it, for instance, is a great example of that. Now, the big thing here is, of course, is that when people then take over verified accounts, they're bringing even more sort of influence. And as we know, the Twitter trolls and the Twitter farms, the Twitter bot farms, are being increasingly used to spread misinformation, etc., etc. And the fact that they can use ostensibly a verified account, which brings with it an extra level of influence, in inverted commas, and credence, just goes to show that actually this is really quite a serious thing. This technically theft of these validated accounts is really, really quite serious. So I really think Twitter needs to do a little bit more about this. I think also we need, you know, and you know, being able to wrestle these accounts back from these scammers and make that far easier. But this is something that, wow, you know, the depths people go to. You know, can you imagine being tweeted at by Graham Cluley to tell you to use, I don't know, to listen to Host Unknown? I mean, instead of smashing security, the impact and the kind of influence that brings is really quite serious, right?
So, you know, I don't know, I probably have less sympathy for people that give up their accounts because they were phished at that level. Because, you know, so what do you expect Twitter to do? Obviously, the recovery aspect, I agree, they can make that easier. But in terms of, you know, monitoring for content that may not be normal, didn't Kardashian recently get fined like $1.25 million for tweeting about cryptocurrency?
Yes.
That, you know, she recommended people invest in. And that was a genuine post that she was paid to give out, you know, paid to do. Like,
but that wasn't Twitter who fined her, was it?
That was Instagram, was it?
The FTC.
But that's what I mean. So, like, how are you going to check whether someone's actually tweeting or posting about genuine content or just scam stuff they've been paid to push?
I think that's a secondary aspect. I think the first part is, can Twitter do more to secure your account? I think absolutely yes. I agree with Tom here. I think if you're a blue check account, they should make MFA mandatory. Why just rely on ID and password? And then there are so many controls out there to do, like, well, you're logging on from LA and all of a sudden you're logging on from Moscow or wherever. You know, it's not that difficult to block.
It's not. So a lot of these blue check accounts, right, they are, you know, high profile celebrities. And believe it or not, those are not the celebrities that are actually posting stuff, right? They've got a team of social media people who are probably geolocated elsewhere. How are you getting the MFA to go to one phone? So someone
there are tools that allow you to run social media teams under a single account.
All right, so now we're going down a whole different route. This is like we're talking about enforcing MFA, but then we're actually talking.
You're taking this down an entirely different route.
No, I'm taking. You're off reservation. How this practically works. This, like, how do you implement this practically? right? And you know, what's the easiest thing to do? Tell people not to click on links that come through their private, through their DMs that say, give us all your details. Or do you like implement all these tools and operational practices to support the dumb people?
No, I don't think it's
well, let's be clear about what I'm ranting at. I'm not ranting at Twitter here. I'm ranting at the fact that people are that about criminals. This isn't a Billy Big Balls where I'm celebrating the criminals. I'm having a go at the criminals here.
You son of a bitch. Go on.
This is a rant. Not a balls.
Okay, so who exactly are you ranting against? Go on.
Criminals.
Wow. I mean, that is so specific, isn't it?
Groundbreaking.
Rant of the week. Criminals, you're out there doing bad stuff. Stop doing bad stuff or look, I'm going to rant some more.
Look, in my defence, we're doing this a day early. I got up exactly, 65 minutes ago, got out of bed because I'm on holiday, and then was dumped this story on my lap. I'm like, Christ, I can't read that. I mean, it's a proper long-form article. Well, it looks long-form to me.
So, Your Honour, might I refer to 8:34 yesterday evening when you said, legendary show notes, Andy. Thank you. So you had
I read them.
No, well, you know, you're making it sound like you only just woke up an hour and a bit ago, and you only just saw this story for the first time. The information was there. So I think if anyone needs a rant, it's like the so-called CISOs who are terrible at time management, terrible at processing information, and won't tell us the spill the tea on what happens at Lloyd's.
You mean the CISOs that are on holiday?
Whatever. A CISO's never off.
That's what the rant is about. Oh, trust me, I'm off duty.
Rant of the week. It doesn't matter if the judges were drinking. Host Unknown was still awarded Europe's most entertaining content status.
All right, so it's time to move on to Jav and Billy Big Balls. And what cyber criminal are you celebrating in this week, Jav?
The best site. Billy Big Balls of the week. So, I really did have a long form article to go into. The company called Meta. They own Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, and what have you. Anyway, there's been a story leaked to an Indian news site called The Wire. And this is a really long article, and there are so many twists and turns. So that I recommend everyone read the story in their own time from the show notes. But what The Wire is claiming that they've heard from internally is that the company had given high-ranking officials in the ruling BJP party, well, BJP, the P stands for party, the ability to remove Instagram.
I enjoy a good BJ party.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, dear, I just realised. Oh, no. So, they... Meta gave high-ranking official in the BJ party the ability to remove Instagram posts at will. Now, this
what?
Is like quite a serious allegation. So, you know, the BJP is not known for being very centrist or leftist, and it's not known for being very friendly with anyone that's critical of the government, like journalists and what have you.
Is the BJP the one that's in power at the moment?
Yes,
right,
exactly. And they also ended up with a lot of the Pegasus stuff. So when that was all leaked, they apparently the Indian government is a happy customer. and they apparently used it against some journalists who were critical of the government and all that kind of stuff. Anyhow, this adds an extra layer to it that they have someone within Meta, within the government who Meta gave access to, say, like, if someone posts something on Instagram that is, we don't agree with, then you can just hit the nuke button and it gets erased from existence. And what's followed is this massive mudslinging competition between Meta, The Wire, and the BJP around what the truth is and what's not and what have you. So it's a real cluster. It's not really clear as to what's happened and what's not happened. Even like they even interviewed in this article where they got a quote from former failed CISO of Facebook and other companies, Alex Stamos.
friend of the show.
Yes. that, you know, the evidence that's been shown doesn't definitively prove anything. It could be trivial to fake this, but then, you know, it's a bit here or there. I think everyone's a bit scared to poke the bear outright. But however, I still think it's incredible. If it is true by the Indian government, it's a huge Billy Big Balls move. The wire that broke the story is the real Billy Big Ball here in the story.
Good recovery.
Whether they're telling the truth or not, either way, it's a good recovery. It could be that they've been... they could be being misled by someone with an ulterior motive to
yes,
you know, tarnish the reputation of the BJP party.
What disinformation in this day and age? Yeah, I know. Not have it.
I know.
In the same sentence as Meta.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So you know, there's inconsistencies, there's missing things, but it's one of those things with today's day and age and with Meta. It's so crazy that part of me wants it all to be true. It's got all the elements there.
I'm going to say it. I think it is true. Meta and Facebook have constantly done really dodgy stuff, paid the fines, moved on and carried on doing it. And every time you think they can't do anything more dodgy, they go on and do something. So this, you know, I would put money on this being actually true.
Yeah, and especially since like there was the when Dot Mudge like testified against Twitter, and he said that, well, Twitter found an ex-employee who was he was found guilty of spying on Saudi dissidents, and I think that in some of the things Mudge brought up, that there could have been someone from the Indian government there, and someone on the board said, or some exec said to him, well, we've already got one, why not have another? In terms of like people like who are spying for governments or what have you, so it's not beyond any stretch of the imagination, and this is where I think social media companies have a lot more work to do,
and specifically Facebook and Meta.
Yeah,
boo! I agree with you, Jav, and a good recovery on the fact as well. Very good.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Billy Big Balls of the Week. If you work hard, research stories with diligence, and deliver well-edited, award-winning, studio-quality content for high-paying sponsors, then you too can be usurped by three idiots who know how to think on their feet. You're listening to the award-winning Host Unknown podcast.
As we know, we are recording this a day early. It's like the Graham Norton show, isn't it? They record that on a Thursday and have to pretend it's like Friday. So that puts us really. It puts us almost like a we're talking to you in the future. And talking of the future and talking of time, Andy, what time is it?
It is that time of the show where we head over to our news sources over at the InfoSec PA Newswire, who have been very busy bringing us the latest and greatest security news from around the globe.
industry news.
Hackney Council ransomware attack cost £12 million plus.
Industry news.
Spanish police bust region's biggest narco bank.
Industry news.
Amazon customers receive smishing warning after receiving fake texts.
Industry news.
Wine merchant among Aussie firms breached, exposing millions.
Industry news.
European police catch suspected car hackers.
Industry news.
Digital natives are undermining corporate security.
Industry news.
Moolah Market reveals $9 million crypto exploit.
Industry news.
NSA cybersecurity director's six takeaways from the war in Ukraine.
Industry news.
Microsoft misconfiguration exposes customer data.
Industry news.
And that was this week's
industry news.
Huge if true.
Huge if true.
I'm going to jump straight on without even reading the article. I think the headline alone is enough. Digital natives are undermining corporate security. I think that really, what that's really saying is corporate security is unable to keep up with digital natives.
Yep. I think you're right. And I'm not going to even click on the story to prove us otherwise.
So they are, yeah, they're talking about millennials and Gen Z. Who bypass cybersecurity controls. They take cybersecurity protection on their personal devices more seriously than their work devices.
Funny that. They got more to lose, right?
They care about.
Yeah, exactly. So I think corporate security is quite literally at fault here. And we need to be, I mean, let's face it, most people in this industry still think the best way to secure something is to unplug it and drop it into the bottom of the ocean encased in concrete, right? Basically saying
no. Faraday cage would also work.
Yeah, true, very true. Yeah, and it'll look pretty as well with the copper around the concrete.
Yeah.
Yes. So I really like that the first story there, the Hackney or Acne Council ransomware attack.
Acne, innit?
Acne, innit? And actually, if you go to hackney.gov.uk/accounts, they have all of their statements of accounts there. And clicking on the one for that year, 2020 to 21, there's a whole section on the cyber attack, which is, I would say, recommended reading for anyone interested in understanding more about it.
Is it done well? Is the reporting on it done well?
Well, it's not like a post-incident report, but from a financial perspective, it gives a lot. So the costs are estimated. Okay, so the estimated cost within the range of 4.9 million to 11.7 million. So midpoint 8.3 million. But then it breaks it down like there's about 2.5 million service costs. There was some backlog costs. There was costs of recovering. And then they actually have like losses on collection of council tax and other things because of the system being down. There was like other income sources that went down. That was about 800K. So it's quite interesting when you start reading it about how how there's a far reaching impact on stuff that, you know, probably a lot of people didn't consider.
Yeah. And it's interesting as well that you don't always see that level of detail from many other companies, right?
No. I suppose this is government and what have you. But yeah, it's all there. You know, have you seen that film about the crash? It's got like Christian Bale.
The Big Short.
The Big Short, yes.
Yes.
And those people, they figure it out. They figure out that the market's going to collapse. And they're like, well, how do you know? And he goes, it's all in the accounts. You just have to read the accounts.
Yes.
And the fact is, everyone's lazy. They don't. They just rely on hearsay or their own feelings. They don't go through it. And I think in security, it's the same sometimes. The stuff is there. It's in the accounts. It's in the risk register. It's in whatever. But, you know, we want an easy way out. And I don't think there is an easy way in many cases. You just have to.
But with the markets, it's about confidence as well, isn't it? So yeah, it's all in the accounts, but you could still read that and go, yes, but. And that was the problem, because there was the guy, the Christian Bale character, he bet his company's entire fortune, effectively. Mm. In fact, he bet his company, or the company he worked for, on the whole thing crashing. And it just didn't. It kept on growing and growing and growing, because there was confidence in the face of very clear financial data.
Mm. Mm. A story that isn't here, but I read it the other day and I thought it would be on here, but it's not, is, you know about romance scams, isn't it? Where you meet someone online and they claim to be the love of your life and you're the love of their life and they desperately want to meet you, but, oh, my dog needs an operation, can you send me some money? And then they send them some money.
Yeah.
And then it's like,
hospital bills, all of that kind bills. Of stuff. Yeah.
And then it all goes up.
I saw your TikTok, Jeff.
You saw my TikTok, so you are well informed. So for those of you who are not following TikTok.com/@J4VV4D, there's a 65-year-old Japanese lady who paid the equivalent of $30,000 because the con artist tricked the woman into believing he was a Russian astronaut on the ISS who couldn't afford the ticket back to Earth.
There was one about a Nigerian astronaut doing exactly the same thing a few years ago. Brilliant, absolutely brilliant. I did see on Twitter there's a woman who's got an account, and she, I think she's either a comedian or a journalist or something. But what she gets, you know, deliberately romance scammed, as it were, and gets involved in them, and then she basically does a photojournalist approach to going to meet them. So this one guy said he was stuck on an oil rig somewhere and he couldn't get to see it, you know, and he needed 10 grand to get the helicopter off, etc. She said, no, don't worry, I'm coming to get you. And there's a picture of her in a helicopter taking off, and then she's, no, don't, oh, yes, don't, you haven't got permission yes to land. And then she's sort of flying over, you know, the sea and says, it's all right, we're here. And then the next one is, oh my God, we've crashed and I'm in a life raft. What am I going to do? And he said, oh, darling, I'm so sorry. And then she washes up on some like ice thing, and then there's a polar bear in the background. She says, help, I'm being chased by this polar bear. It's just, and this guy goes, oh, my dear love, I'm so sorry. You shouldn't have come to me. It's very, very funny. I'll have to see if I can find her and put her in the show notes. But yes, it's brilliant,
I remember
brilliant
seeing
account.
That was hilarious. It was absolutely brilliant. But it was very good.
Oh, dear. Right, let's move on, shall we? That was this week's
industry news. This is the Host Unknown podcast.
Okay, it's now time for the last part of the show. It's time for
Tweet of the Week.
And we always play that one twice.
Tweet of the Week.
And I shall take us home with this one, although it is getting much harder to find humorous tweets living in the UK with politics, as we are on our next Prime Minister after the resignation of Liz Truss.
We've got 24 hours and a good chance that's actually going to come true.
Oh, no, it's happening. It is actually happening right now. So anyway, whoever the Prime Minister is at the time you're listening to this show, I'm going to try and get this tweet out before they're gone as well. So this is from Chet Dawn, Global CISO, on Twitter. And he says, when a cybersecurity vendor asked for some time with me, I don't send them my Calendly. Instead, I send them an open table link to make a reservation at my favourite steakhouse. Really narrows down who's serious. And this is a genius way to deal with vendors.
This is totally brilliant. Really absolutely love it.
The chef.
He did one as well. He said, if when I'm trying to book a meeting with you, you send me your Calendly, I will not take you seriously. If you send me the name of your EA, I will take you seriously.
Yeah. Didn't you? I tell you what, Tom. I'll always remember when you brought your EA to Dublin one time for IrisCon, and you didn't even know it was her birthday that week.
Shush you. Nobody
tells
me
you
nothing.
Know you're important. That's how you know you're important.
Well, when she probably bought herself a card on your behalf and a little present.
Look, that was drunk, Tom.
Yeah, but Tom, you do realise this Chet Dawn Global CISO is a parody account. It does not constitute actual CISO advice. So please,
okay, all right. So that script I wrote, and you know I'm joking because I'm already saying I wrote a script about the open table link.
Okay, when you talk about that kind of script, yeah, everyone knows you couldn't even get a V lookup in Excel going, let alone anything else.
No, I just shout to the EA, oi, sort this out. Excellent. That was this week's
Tweet of the Week.
Wow, we've come barreling into the end of the episode just as Andy sends us a picture of Liz Truss giving a statement. A statement of what, though? What the hell's going on?
I kid you not, she is resigning right now.
Seriously?
This is not a joke. Yes, this is not a joke. The Prime Minister is resigning.
Well, you know, hopefully... Well, actually, I did think that maybe we'd get a little bit of stability until after the show was released, right? But apparently not. Apparently not. Okay. Well... On that note, dear listeners, Jav, thank you very much for your contributions and time today.
Well, you're welcome.
And Andy, thank you.
Stay secure, my friends.
Stay secure.
You've been listening to the Host Unknown podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard, comment and subscribe. If you hated it, please leave your best insults on our Reddit channel.
Worst episode ever.
r/smashing security.
Either of you guys thinking of running?
I don't think anyone could do any worse, could they? Make stuff up, do a couple of U-turns. Do you know what? It's literally, I reckon it's just like this podcast, right? You just show up and insult the people across the room from you. And every now and then someone else, like, you know, comes up with suggestions. But it doesn't matter if you get it right or not, because you're only tanking the economy.
No. In fact, do you know what? I think the three of us together as Host Unknown should make a bid for Prime Minister.
I'm heading to Westminster now.
You know, I'll take Mondays and Wednesdays. Andy, you take Tuesdays and Fridays. Jav, you take Thursdays and Saturdays.
I record a podcast. Fridays don't work for me. I record a podcast.
I was going to say, and we'll take every third Sunday. I mean, what the hell?
Sounds like a plan. We could. We need to think of the people we'd hire in the cabinet to be our fall people for the inevitable screw up.
Oh, well, Cluley and Carole, definitely.
Yeah.